The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Also donates to our community, including the Salvation Army and minor hockey, and 10,000 worth of kayaks to municipal recreation, and where he was pivotal in Yarmouth's attempt to keep our riding united. And whereas on November 15, 2012, the Yarmouth and Area Chamber of Commerce held its annual Business Awards Banquet, and whereas Mike Mercier was awarded Business Person of the Year, therefore be it resolved that the members of this House of Assembly congratulate Mike Mercier on being named Business Person of the Year at the 2012 Yarmouth and Area Chamber of Commerce Business Awards Banquet, and thank him for very generously giving back to his community. Mr. Speaker, I ask for a waiver of notice and pass it without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against say nay. Motion is carried. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 12:47 and we will finish at 1:47. The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
You're here.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This government has handed out $590 million to six corporations and watched those corporations lay off more than 1,300 Nova Scotians. On April 16, 2003, the now agricultural minister stated, quote, "What the Minister of Economic Development tends to forget is that $9 million could have been used to create some jobs that were sustainable, not gone down the road. If somebody wants to know what it looks like to give away $9 million for nothing, they might want to take a look at this," end quote. I would suggest that $590 million could have been used to create some jobs that were sustainable. And if somebody wants to know what it looks like to give away $590 million, they could look at these deals by this government, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Economic Development Minister, why did he sit back and watch six companies he agreed to give $590 million of taxpayers' money to lay off more than 1,300 Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what we are doing is we are creating a good, healthy environment when it comes to employment in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, since we've taken over as government, we've increased employment by 7,600 jobs, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the member opposite should be more concerned about those jobs, those federal jobs that are leaving the province of Nova Scotia. We are creating jobs in the province of Nova Scotia. Our jobs here plan is working, Mr. Speaker, and we stand by it.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On April 30th, 2009, the MLA for Pictou East said, quote, "But to pump so much money into the Industrial Expansion Fund and at the very same time almost creating a bit of a competition with Nova Scotia Business Inc. To some degree, I think we have had a return to the politics of the 1940s and 50s with this government. And the people of Nova Scotia will remember what's going on in this province," end quote. This government has set record for slush fund spending that they called slush fund, once ridiculed by this government and this party, and that member in particular. $590 million to six corporations who laid off 1,300 of our Nova Scotian workers. So my question to the minister, why is this government writing blank checks to big businesses after criticizing the Conservative government for that practice in 2009?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what we criticized was the IEF. And, Mr. Speaker, as a result of that, when we came in power in June, we realized that the IEF had needed some oversight. And actually what we've done, Mr. Speaker, we disregarded the IEF. We created the Jobs Fund with greater security, greater oversight, based on, in fact, Mr. Speaker, based on the recommendations and the checks-offs by the AG, by the Auditor General, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have a fund now that is doing just what it's supposed to be doing with accountability and transparency, Mr. Speaker, not like previous governments, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this minister added $50 million and changed the name. That's all he did with the slush fund. It's no different than the way it works now. On May 16, 2001, the member for Halifax, Chibucto, said, quote, "What is the problem with Nova Scotia Business Inc.? Unfortunately, it is all too apparent what the problem is. Here is what goes on in the Department of Economic Development. The department has a fair bit of money to spend on economic development. Now it has about $60 million as part of its budget each year. The problem has been that in the past there has been a tradition of giveaways of that money. The tradition has been that in order to attract business or to stimulate business in this province, there has been nothing but a history of giveaways." End quote. That member criticized giving away $50 million, while this government has handed out almost $600 million to six corporations who laid off 1,300 Nova Scotians. So my question to the Minister of Economic Development, why is he handing out $590 million to companies that lay off Nova Scotians when $60 million wasn't acceptable in 2001?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. After 20 years of being in last place, the province of Nova Scotia finally, Mr. Speaker, got a government that wanted to move forward, wanted to advance the province of Nova Scotia in more, not only just in jobs, but in training and education and health care and everything, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what we have now is a government that's moving forward. We've got a province that's moving forward. 2 weeks ago, Mr. Speaker, we made the announcements of 1,000 good jobs coming to Nova Scotia. No longer will we have Nova Scotians going west, but we're going to have the west coming to Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for Premier Obama over there. Last night, Mr. Speaker, the Premier... I withdraw that.
All right, sorry.
Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, last night...
Okay.
Mr. Speaker, last night the Premier accused his critics of saying he was, quote, obsessed with jobs. Well, I just want you to know, sir, I checked with his critics here in the Progressive Conservative Caucus, and none of us have ever accused him of being obsessed with jobs, and I'm willing to bet that criticism never came from the other opposition caucus either, Mr. Speaker. Certainly it did not come from the 7,400 Nova Scotians who are without a full-time job today as compared to when the Premier took office. In fact, Mr. Speaker, Statistics Canada reports that Nova Scotia's economy last year grew by a meager 0.5%, the lowest in the country, while the rest of Canada grew five times faster. Halifax did grow by 1.5%, which clearly means that the rest of Nova Scotia actually had a period of economic decline. And so my question to the Premier is, will the Premier tell us why rural Nova Scotia is so obsessed with job losses under his watch? And I'll table those statistics for the benefit of the House.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The information that he's just quoted, of course, is wrong, but that's usually the case. Mr. Speaker, in fact, the level of employment in this province has increased since June of 2009. by some 7,600 jobs. But that is beside the fact, Mr. Speaker. The simple fact of the matter is that the investments that we are making is designed to ensure the long-term health of the province of Nova Scotia. The investment in Irving Shipbuilding means tens of thousands of jobs for Nova Scotia when combined with investments that we have made, for example, in Port Hawkesbury paper, that solidifies that community and means that there continues to be payroll going into that community, that there continues to be goods in stores, there continues to be kids in those schools because we support the community. Mr. Speaker, I've heard it said many times that this seems to be an obsession with our government, which is the economic development of this province. We understand that in the opposition, you support none of these measures. It's important that the people of the province know that you do not care about the economic development of our province.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, according to Statistics Canada, Nova Scotia had the worst record for consumer spending in 2011 during the NDP time in office, combined with the highest cost of living in the whole country. It's in the document that I tabled in my first question. Clearly, this is a time of economic hardship for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, and their standard of living has actually gone into reverse. For business investment actually dropped by a third below the national average last year, Mr. Speaker. When people aren't investing, jobs are not being created. Will the Premier explain why Nova Scotia has a dismal record under his obsessive watch?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I just have no idea where the Leader of the Opposition is getting this information. In fact, business investment in Nova Scotia is so enthusiastic that a member of his staff said in a report in the Chronicle Herald that this was a great time to be an investor in Nova Scotia, and that in fact he was going into the private sector specifically because that was a business investment climate was so good in Nova Scotia, and he'll undoubtedly remember that article. Simple fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, there are 30 building cranes up over Halifax today. More economic activity taking place in Halifax, in the regional municipality of Halifax, than at any time in our past, Mr. Speaker. This is a time where we are building the prosperity of our province after having inherited a mess from the previous government.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, wherever the Premier dreamt up this critic that believes that he's obsessed with jobs must be the same place he dreamt up that answer, because it is so far from the reality of Nova Scotia today. Mr. Speaker, fact of the matter is, outside Halifax, the rest of Nova Scotia is in real economic decline and facing real job losses, Mr. Speaker. In fact, the Canadian Federation of Independent Business recently reported that farming optimism is at an all-time low, 13% lower than the rest of the country, and that a majority of our rural farms are facing closure or reduction in their workforce. Mr. Speaker, that's the CFIB, a real entity, not an imaginary critic. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier, when will he admit that his policies are killing jobs and opportunity in rural Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you know, we are the only province in the country in which the number of farmers is actually growing, Mr. Speaker. People are actually moving back into agriculture because they see a government that is actually committed to enhancing the agriculture sector, just as we have in the forestry sector, Mr. Speaker, because we're not willing to walk away from communities It is this government that created the Atlantic Venture Capital Fund that has been joined by New Brunswick and by Prince Edward Island in order to make sure that there is more capital available to small, innovative businesses, cutting-edge technology. These are the kinds of investments that we make in order to ensure there is a good economic future for the young people in this province and for the taxpayers who have to, after all, bear the load of supporting the services that we have.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Speaker. Ties between the NDP government and Nova Scotia Power have always been strong. We've seen this many times over the last 3 years as the Premier and his government have become the chief apologist for Nova Scotia Power. So my question for the Premier, how often does the Premier and his office staff correspond with officials of Nova Scotia Power?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I think just as with every business in the province, we would, of course, correspond when they make a request of us or if it was necessary for one reason or another. After all, Mr. Speaker, one of the things we make sure of for all businesses, no matter what sector they are in, is that they have the opportunity to speak with members of my office or, for that matter, any of the offices of government.
Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, heavily redacted documents obtained by our office prove the Premier's inner circles in regular contact with Nova Scotia Power officials. Mr. Speaker, as a matter of fact, the emails we've obtained show the Premier's staff report comments made in scrums just outside of this house to the Premier's inner circle and to employees of Nova Scotia Power. You would think, Mr. Speaker, that Nova Scotia Power and Emera have enough money to assign their own staff to the Nova Scotia Legislature, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier, why has the Premier assigned his staff to be Nova Scotia Power's eyes and ears at the Legislature?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as the Leader of the Opposition would know, as he is right now, often asks questions about Nova Scotia Power. He often, even though they're a privatized company, privatized by previous governments, he asks questions. If he asks questions for us where the information resides somewhere else, well, of course, we would look to try and fulfill our responsibility to the Leader of the Opposition and answer his questions.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Speaker, what the email was reporting information back to Nova Scotia Power of what the media are asking this Premier about their utility, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what's clear to us now and clear to the people of this province is when it comes to power and energy policy in this province, Nova Scotia Power is part of the NDP government's inner circle. Things are so tight between the government and Nova Scotia Power, Mr. Speaker, that the Premier's staff even apologized for not passing along information in a timely enough manner, Mr. Speaker. The Premier's staff, senior government officials, a deputy minister, and a redacted recipient at Nova Scotia Power are all part of the government's energy inner circle. It's bad enough Nova Scotians are paying the highest power rates in Canada, Mr. Speaker. Now they are learning their tax dollars are being used to defend this corporation's monopoly. So my question to the Premier, why is the Premier marshalling government resources to support Nova Scotia Power's monopoly?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, I just want to correct the fact we don't have the highest power costs in the country. That's something that he continually says that's not true. But, Mr. Speaker, what I recall is this. We got elected in June of 2009 when we did. The Leader of the Opposition came into his office. And one of the first things he did, Mr. Speaker, after he hired a consultant to be able to tell him how to run his office, was he hired an executive from Nova Scotia Power to be his chief of staff.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on a new question.
Mr. Speaker, emails obtained from our office further highlight the close connection between this government and the NDP and Nova Scotia Power. On Thursday, March 15th, 2012, Mr. Speaker, the Premier's staff sent the Environment Minister's speech on new coal-fired regulations to someone in Nova Scotia Power 5 days before it was delivered to the public. Speaker, so my question to the Premier, why is this government sending the speaking notes of a cabinet minister to Nova Scotia Power 5 days before they're delivered to Nova Scotians?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't know if they were requested or not, but the point is that we, of course, communicate with businesses in all sectors, and we want them to know what it is we're going to say. We want them to know the context for the decisions that we're making. That's part of the consultation process. But I can't imagine that you could get any closer with a company than hiring one of their executives to be your chief of staff.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Speaker, it's too bad, Mr. Speaker, it's too bad the Premier hadn't consulted the private sector companies that were opposed to first contract arbitration, like the way he seems to be cuddling up in all this good power. Mr. Speaker, with the exception of the title page and all table, the speaking notes of the Environment Minister were entirely redacted, Mr. Speaker. It is odd that the speaking notes were redacted as the speech was delivered publicly on Monday, 5 full days after the email was sent to Nova Scotia Power. For some reason, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia Power was allowed to see the speaking notes while the elected members of this House and the people of Nova Scotia are not. So my question to the Premier, what changes did Nova Scotia Power make to the minister's speech that this government doesn't want Nova Scotians to see?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I haven't seen what it is that the Leader of the Opposition is tabling. I'll be happy to have a look at it for him and to see if there's any merit to the allegations he's made. All I know, Mr. Speaker, is he complains about the relationship of the government of Nova Scotia Power. He hired one of their executives to be his chief of staff. He hired another one of them to be a communications officer. Mr. Speaker, now I understand a Liberal candidate, if anyone had a close connection to Nova Scotia Power, it is the Nova Scotia Liberal Party.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this leader, Mr. Speaker, doesn't fly on America's jet, Mr. Speaker. This leader doesn't inform Nova Scotia Power, Mr. Speaker, of speaking notes of anyone. And, Mr. Speaker, this leader doesn't apologize for Nova Scotia Power's monopoly. Speaker, but that leader and that government do, Mr. Speaker. Now the Premier's office is giving Nova Scotia Power influence over the speaking notes of cabinet ministers in his government, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier, will the Premier table the original, unredacted speaking notes of his minister along with the email so Nova Scotians can see what input Nova Scotia Power has on this document?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, We have consultations with all kinds of companies around the province, Mr. Speaker. And as I pointed out, the Leader of the Opposition and the Liberal Party generally has been closely connected to Nova Scotia Power for many, many, many years. So, Mr. Speaker, what we are trying to ensure is that the power rates that the people of this province have are as low and as stable as possible. And that means getting off of fossil fuels, ramping down the amount of coal that's being used, ensure that we have more renewables, lower greenhouse gas emissions. It means ensuring that we have an environmentally sustainable power system. It means ensuring that the people of the province will have rate stability over the long term. That is what our relationship with Nova Scotia Power is about. It's about ensuring that they understand the goals of this government is lower emissions, lower chaining to fossil fuels, and good, stable, long-term rates.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Acting Minister of Health. Yesterday, Mr. Speaker, the Auditor General's report showed the extent to which the Department of Health and Wellness mismanages taxpayers' dollars. The report shows that Capital Health proposed a project that would save Nova Scotians $3 million annually. The approval process was skewed. The initial score given to the project eliminated it from consideration. The Auditor General says the scoring did not appear consistent with the scoring matrix. The department couldn't explain what happened. Through the audit, the project was finally approved, but the department still can't explain the inconsistency. So my question to you, why couldn't the Auditor General get answers to these serious questions?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, good question. But, Mr. Speaker, the reality is that we did it. And that's what the third party doesn't get, is that we actually go and we do things and they get them done. And that's the end of the story. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his first supplementary.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, they did do it, but it was after they got caught, Mr. Speaker.
That's right.
Mr. Speaker, Capital Health explained that the savings would mainly be realized through a reduction in FTEs. The matrix is flawed, but the scoring was inconsistent with the matrix. You have to wonder what exactly took place. So my question through you to the Minister, did the department tinker with the numbers to maintain funding for an unnecessary number of FTEs?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
No.
Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government routinely ignores opportunities for cost savings in our health care system. We've highlighted the Ernst & Young report where they ignored $43 million in savings. We've highlighted the short-sighted budgeting of 11-12 when they allocated $0 for hospital equipment. Now we have an issue with questionable conduct surrounding the scoring matrix for future projects. The minister doesn't believe his department should be accountable for this. So my final question to you, to the minister, will the minister explain exactly what went wrong with the matrix, why it was inconsistent, and what's being done to ensure no future cost savings are so carelessly overlooked?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the member, Mr. Speaker, at least we have a matrix. And it's working, Mr. Speaker, more than what they had. They had stuff like Corpus Sanchez that just spent money and didn't help the health care, didn't provide a job to anybody, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we're now engaged with the DHAs, and we see reductions now in executives, and we're down, and that's being reduced, Mr. Speaker. We also see merged services, Mr. Speaker, where we can move forward and see real savings, Mr. Speaker. That's what we're doing. That's what we had to clean up, Mr. Speaker. When we got to here, the medicine chest was empty, Mr. Speaker. We're refilling it for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in opposition, the Premier was an advocate for investing in post-secondary education and reducing tuition rates. In fact, on April 26, 2005, and I'll table this, the Premier tabled a petition, which he signed, calling on the government to, and I quote, make a considerable reinvestment in core funding to Nova Scotia's post-secondary institutions and tie increased core funding to progressive reductions of tuition fees at Nova Scotia's public post-secondary institutions, end quote. My question to the Premier is, Mr. Speaker, if the Premier still stands by this statement, how does he justify his $100 million in cuts to universities and the subsequent hikes in tuition fees in the province of Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, first of all, that's a fabrication. There hasn't been $100 million in cuts to post-secondary education. In fact, it's a very different picture emerging for universities. We are, in fact, putting aside the Innovation Fund, which is allowing universities to take advantage of capital investment, which will actually reduce their costs, not just for a single year, but over the long term through effective savings, so that money can actually be reinvested in their students. Mr. Speaker, when we came here in 2009, one of the very first things that we had to deal with was the fact that the federal contribution to post-secondary education in the province was going to be reduced by $30 million, would have meant a 15 to 20% increase in the cost of tuition for students. Mr. Speaker, we could have passed that right along to students. Did we do that? No, we did not. Mr. Speaker, we backfilled
all of that loss, that considerable loss of revenue, in a time when it was very difficult to get to a balanced budget, wanting to balance off health care, support for seniors, the necessity to repair roads that had been neglected for years, Mr. Speaker. And even through all of that, we made students a priority.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, no wonder this Premier is losing credibility with students, their parents, universities, and the public, because he gets up and says things that aren't true in this House of Assembly. There was a $34 million operational cut to core funding in universities, and if you add inflationary costs, that leads up to $100 million, and that's according to the universities. I have the data here. I'll table that. And Mr. Speaker, this Premier stands up and says that if it wasn't for his government, tuition would go up 15 to 20%. That would be impossible under the current contract that this province actually has signed with universities, which limits tuition at 3%, Mr. Speaker, a maximum increase at 3%. That was signed by the previous government in 2004. 3% tuition has been the cap since 2004. I have the most recent copy of that MOU signed by his minister. And so if the Premier says tuition was going to go up 20%, he would have to break his own contract with the universities of this province, Mr. Speaker.
That's possible.
One interesting thing about this MOU compared to the previous MOU, however, Mr. Speaker, is that this MOU, signed by this government, allows for tuitions to go up even more next year. So my question to the Premier is, if the Tuition Policy Review recommends a tuition increase, will the Premier stand up for Nova Scotian students and their families, invest in their education, and deny further tuition increases to our institutions?
Here. Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, according to the member from Yarmouth, $34 million plus inflation equals $100 million. That's an extraordinary math, Mr. Speaker. I have to say, the simple fact of the matter is that the MOUs continue to be renegotiated, but those MOUs actually took into account the amount of money that was being supplied by the federal government. And one of the reasons why tuition in this province is so high is because when the Liberal governments of the 1990s got it all of the federal funding out of post-secondary education, the tuition prices skyrocketed. And they have stayed up there since the 1990s.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
Right. It's the same old story from this Premier. Blame past governments back all the way to Jerry Regan and not take any responsibility himself for the cuts that he has made. Those numbers are based on math that was provided by the universities of this province, and I trust their word any day over the word of this Premier, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotia has the least affordable post-secondary education in the country, Mr. Speaker. I'll table that. That's according to the Canada Centre for Learning for Policy Alternatives. Stay here. We have the third highest undergraduate tuition rate in the country, and we have the second highest graduate tuition rate in the country. And this Premier still stands up and boasts about all the great work he's doing relieving the cost of tuition to the people of this province. It's false. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to quote the Premier from April 2nd, 2007, then Leader of the Opposition. He said, and I quote, "That is part of the gap of what is said and what is done. Grants to students instead of loans is an appreciative initiative. I'm pleased with this, but it's not a substitute for actual tuition reductions." And I'll quote those comments here. And so my final question to the Premier is one that he actually asked to then Premier in 2004, and I quote, "How does the government expect the universities in Nova Scotia to continue to offer high quality education when they are continually starved for funding?" End quote.
Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and as I understand that the member of the Yarmouth used to be a student leader at one point in time, and if you go far enough back in history, so was I. Always we have understood that Access to university is made up of two parts. They are made up of tuition costs and assistance to students. Because if you have no assistance, no matter how low the tuition is, you have difficulty being able to attend. So, Mr. Speaker, what we did is we took a two-pronged approach. We inherited the worst, the absolute highest tuitions in the country, and they are now sliding down towards the middle of the pack. That's why he said the third highest now, because they have continued to decrease relative to the other comparative to the other tuitions, other provinces. Now, but more than that, Mr. Speaker, we took the worst student loan program in the country and made it one of the best. We brought in the student debt cap. We brought in increased access to needs-related grants. And over and above that, Mr. Speaker, we have now a new graduate tax rebate that means that if people graduate from our universities, stay in the province, they will recover the cost of their tuition, Mr. Speaker. That is what is the great news for young people in our province.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, 8,200 Nova Scotians between the ages of 15 and 24 have lost full-time employment since October 2009. Mr. Speaker, that's close to the same population as North Sydney, my hometown. At the same time as we're losing full-time jobs, we're adding debt to fund the NDP's expensive bailouts and handouts. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Economic Development and Rural Development and Tourism is, will the minister admit his jobs where plan has failed young Nova Scotians and rename the plan wasteful spending here?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm always welcome the opportunity to get on my feet and talk about all the good things that we are doing for employment in the province of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, with the help of this government, Irving landed the ship's here contract, Mr. Speaker. 11,500 jobs, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government, just last week, Mr. Speaker, signed an agreement with two companies that are bringing almost 1,000 jobs here, Mr. Speaker. That means $130 million and $135 million, respectively, in payroll during their term to the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, that amounts to, over the term, that means $13 million after incentives are paid, Mr. Speaker. And I stress, after incentives are paid, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have
order,
proven...
Order. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, we have proven time and time again, we have a strategy, we are doing things different, we will continue on the path of success.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we appreciate the fact that there could be potential jobs, but to this date, I don't think there's any jobs created by that money invested in those companies to date. Mr. Speaker, total employment, full and part-time, for Nova Scotians aged 15 to 24 has dropped 9%. That's nine times the national average. Meanwhile, 3,800 Nova Scotians have left the labour force in the last 3 years. At the same time, the NDP have added nearly $1 billion to our province's debt. There are no jobs, and our children will inherit responsibility for this NDP's debt. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, what advice would the minister give to these students, and how are they expected to pay the new NDP debt with no jobs?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Unlike the previous government, Mr. Speaker, when we came up with the Jobs Here strategy, we put in place a program for recent grads. And Mr. Speaker, with these jobs that are coming to the province of Nova Scotia, we have an agreement with these governments that they will hire. They will hire recent graduates, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, now I know that it may take a little getting used to for the third party, because they certainly didn't do things this way. In fact, Mr. Speaker, they did nothing at all.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we didn't add death to lose jobs in this province. Mr. Speaker, the unemployment rate for young men aged 15 to 24 in this province has gone up by 41.4% since October 2009. That's 41.4%, Mr. Speaker. The NDP's wasteful spending here, Mr. Speaker, their jobs here plan is failing. Nova Scotians and the students here today deserve better. They deserve lower taxes, they need to stop wasteful spending, and they need more jobs. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, will the minister finally admit his plan has failed young Nova Scotians and apologize to the unemployed who saw their numbers increase by 41.4% and for adding $1 billion of debt on their shoulders?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would... Dare I say this, but I would think that the member would be against those nice, good jobs Hinnis riding and that created with COPOL. And Mr. Speaker, I just want to read something, Mr. Speaker, very, very recent today. And you know, this is by Valerie Payne. Now, I think we all know Valerie Payne is president of the Halifax Chamber of Commerce. And she says, and I quote, Mr. Speaker, surely we cannot expect to do the same thing. Take the same approaches over and over and expect a different result. Seriously, we expect changes. But not actually change with a question mark. We have much more important issues facing it. And let's not, for sure, absolutely for sure, lash out at those businesses that choose to locate here. Unless, of course, we would prefer that they and others like them not come and let them take their business elsewhere. End of quote.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, in the spring of 2011, the Strait Area Women's Place opened its doors. Since then, women and girls from the area have been coming to the centre to access services such as crisis counselling, parenting classes, and workshops. The center's first year was supported by a pilot project from the IWK and was a resounding success. This past spring, the center applied to the Minister of Community Services for funding to sustain the Women's Center. Community organizations saw the merit in the work of the Strait Area Women's Place and wrote to the Minister of Community Services to ask for funding to continue this good work. So my question is, will the minister tell members of this House why she denied funding to the Strait Area Women's Place in March 2012?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have supported women's centres and transition houses in this province way more than the Liberals or the Conservatives ever thought of. We invested $500,000, which we said was a commitment that we made as an election commitment, and we fulfilled that commitment. And there's many of the centres that we're doing a lot of good work, and in particular, the question the Honourable Member is asking is the fact that that was a pilot project, and that's what pilot projects are all about, is to let them run their course and then look at them at that time and make decisions based on what other programs that we have offered throughout the province and in that area.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, when you have a pilot project that everyone deems to be a resounding success, one would think it's only logical that you continue to fund something that everyone has deemed to be a success. Speaker, the minister told the organization that the department could not fund the Strait Area Women's Place on the basis of tough economic times. The Strait Area Women's Place has remained open through the support of other centers, volunteer hours, and fundraising. This clearly is not a sustainable arrangement. The Minister of Community Services recently received a letter requesting that the Strait Area Women's Place be funded for 2013 and an investment of $70,000 by her department. So my question is, will the Minister tell us today whether or not she will provide the funding so that the Strait Area Women's Place can keep its doors open and offer these important services to the women of the Strait Area?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I understand that part of the funding was coming from a variety of areas, and as I said, we are offering many different programs throughout the province and in that area that is meeting the needs that have come forward to us. Once again, it was a pilot project. We've made the decision at this moment that we are not going to go any further with that project, but I'm always open, as I have always been as a minister, to sit down and have a meeting with individuals or groups to discuss those issues further.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, with all due respect to the Minister, if these services were already being offered, then no one would deem the pilot project to have been a success. One would say it was unnecessary. Yet in this case, I've yet to hear the Minister acknowledge it to be a success, but everyone else has deemed it to be a success, and that's why, even after she rejected funding last year, they found means through organizations, through volunteering, through fundraising, to continue this service because it was necessary. But if the Premier thinks that this is the way that they should continue to be operating such an important service for women, I don't think any other Nova Scotian deems that to be reasonable, certainly in light of the challenges being faced in the local area. So I'll ask the Minister again, in light of the various letters of support from multiple organizations throughout the Strait area that have deemed this to have been a resounding success, will she see to it that this centre is appropriately funded so it continue its work into 2013?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's important to know that we were the first government in a decade that recognized the significance and importance of women's centres and transition houses, and we did give them dollars. We gave them $500,000. The Liberal parties, it's funny how they stand there and they pretend that they care now. You know what? The past and the way that you, Mr. Speaker, the past reflects the present. And the way they act in the past and not supporting this type of initiative or other initiatives just tells Nova Scotians how they would be acting in the now or in the future if they made government. And that would be a sad, sad state because we would be turning time back decades. It is us who have supported the women's centres in this province. They never did, so they have no right to go forward and pretend that they care now. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier continues to resist calls for a public process to allow healing and uncover what happened at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children. Voices, a group of abuse claimants and former residents of the home, has launched an online petition demanding an inquiry into the abuse they claim they have suffered at the home. My question is to the Minister of Justice. Why is the Minister of Justice refusing to give these residents a public forum so they can begin the healing process before it's too late?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And once again, there's a lot of emotion around this issue, and I've heard the various people that are affected by this matter speak, and my sympathy goes out to them and their journey. As a government, we're hard looking at the criminal matters. I've voiced that the RCMP are conducting their investigations. I get some indications there's reports coming forward from them soon. The civil process continues to go. We're looking, consulting with the various options and impacts that this matter is having within the community, and we will continue to do that. And unlike the opposition, who I believe is not sensitive to this issue, but is trying to make political gain.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplement.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I can only say that we're raising this concern because the people are raising this concern. So, Mr. Speaker, Mike Dull, a lawyer for the firm that represents the former residents, was reported in the Herald today talking about criminal cases and civil cases. And he said, and I quote, and I will table that, what neither of these legal processes can do is look into and address the discriminatory practices of the past. Only a public inquiry can do that. The home, Mr. Speaker, has no objection to a public forum for healing. Experts like Dr. McKay say nothing legally impedes running the two processes together. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister of Justice, why is he refusing to give these residents a public forum so they can begin the healing process?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I just want to assure the member there that that I read the materials from the home, and I've been digesting their presentation. I also had the opportunity to listen to Mr. McKay and have an understanding of his points of view, and he acknowledges that the government's approach that we're taking is sound in its own right, that he runs out and he makes the correlation that an inquiry could run in his opinion. I also had the opportunity just recently, within the last 48 hours, to speak to some of the people in passing that are involved in this matter, and I assured them that we have a compassionate heart and mind. Our mind is open. We're willing to look at all the issues, and that as a government, we must look at the full picture and get a full understanding of events and how to move forward. I should point out, though, that for 10 years, the third party that raised this question were in government and did not do their due diligence in addressing the issues there.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's never too late to do the right thing. In an editorial in the Chronicle Herald on November 17th, they called for an inquiry, saying it's time for the government, and I will table that, it's time that the government responded to the former resident's courage with courage of its own. There are many factors that weigh in favour of holding the public forum now, including whether the people involved will actually live long enough to take part in a delayed inquiry. Many of the former residents of the home are now in their 70s and 80s. They may not live to see the results of the court cases or to see the charges laid against former staff. Mr. Speaker, I'm hearing a lot of talk out of the minister today. Perhaps he could provide these people with some substance to know that he will take their request for a public inquiry seriously.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much. And I couldn't agree with the member more. It's never too late to do the right thing. And that's what we're doing. We're consulting. We're getting all the appropriate information. And when he talks about courage in the public forum, is that we have an open mind. We are looking at the issues. Unlike his government, who did not, and I repeat, did not address this issue, and it's shame on them.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Mr. Speaker, Ottawa is close to releasing a long-term infrastructure plan, and municipalities are concerned that the federal government is not going to meet their needs. Here in Nova Scotia, this NDP government has already cancelled the municipal MOU, which has cost every municipality in this province and stretched their capacity to deal with long-term infrastructure. My question is to the Minister of Municipal Relations. Why has this minister not been advocating on behalf of our municipalities on this file?
The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure if it's a genetic thing with the Liberals to get their information wrong, but the issue that the member raises, certainly, I have raised it at our federal, provincial, territorial meetings around infrastructure funding. Minister Labelle came to our meeting a year ago, but was unable to come this year. Transportation and infrastructure renewal in this province is the department that is the lead on the infrastructure negotiation with the federal government. But I've made it clear with my colleague, the Minister for Transportation, and also with his present deputy, who was a deputy at the Department of Agriculture. So I have a good rapport with that deputy to impress upon him that when he is in Ottawa working on this file, to think about the municipal side of infrastructure. And I want that member and all members to know that we are genuinely concerned around where the federal government might go with its funding around infrastructure, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Federation of Canadian Municipalities has already requested $2.5 billion from Ottawa. This would help our communities plan for and secure long-term infrastructure projects which are sorely needed in many towns and municipalities in Nova Scotia. It was this NDP minister who cancelled the municipal MOU, putting this kind of long-term work at jeopardy. All the more reason that he must stand up to the Harper Conservatives and ensure that our communities have the resources from Ottawa they require. What action is the minister taking on behalf of our municipalities across the province to ensure that Ottawa meets the needs of Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for his question. I think that the changes in the MOU, and actually it wasn't so much cancelling of the MOU, it was actually following the clauses of the MOU, which allowed the province to move away from the MOU. So the members opposite don't like to hear that, but they can actually read it in the MOU. The clause is there, and I apologize if I confuse them with facts. That does seem to happen. The issue around infrastructure funding is a genuine concern. I think that members in this province, and I think municipal leaders across the country, have tried to impress upon the federal government. I think provincial governments and certainly provincial ministers who sit on this file across the country have definitely raised it with the federal minister and the. I know my colleague, the Minister of Transportation, who actually has the lead on this file with the federal government, has done that as well, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Minister talks about the right to cancel the MOU, and he's correct. He can do that. He did that. But he didn't also take into account the serious financial crisis that's caused some of the municipalities and some of the area. Maybe the minister should do more homework before he speaks in here. Mr. Speaker, we haven't heard anything from this minister to date on this file. The minister's silence is puzzling, since he should be voicing the concerns of Nova Scotians in Ottawa. He should be making the case that there is an infrastructure deficit in our province which needs to be fixed. Instead, he canceled the MOU. He made it harder for municipalities across the province to finance this important work. When will the minister stand up to the Harper Conservatives and clearly make the case for our communities that need proper support so they can replace deteriorating infrastructure?
Honourable the Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The member may know and may choose to ignore the fact that the municipalities presently are better off coming away from the MOU than they were when they entered it. And that was because of the initiative we took when we backed away from the MOU. So they didn't get all they wanted. They would have got in a few years, but that would have meant that Nova Scotians would have carried a greater burden than they deserve to carry for the services that are carried by the municipalities. So the municipal units have seen an increase in assessment over last year, a 6% increase. They have the ability to set their tax rate to meet the demands, whatever they might be, for infrastructure improvement in their municipal units, and we continue to be a voice to the federal government to let them know the seriousness of the issue for the deficit in infrastructure in this province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Community Services is silent on cuts to heating assistance rebates, silent on power increases, and has dragged her heels on a new housing strategy. Mr. Speaker, that strategy was promised a full year ago. Only now has the Minister seen fit to begin consultations. That's 3.5 years into a 4-year mandate. Mr. Speaker, there are currently 1,800 families waiting for homes. They need action from this minister now. The federal government transferred almost $52 million this year for social housing under the Social Housing Transfer Agreement, and I'll table that. If this money isn't being spent on social housing, and it's not, what is the minister spending it on?
The Honourable Minister of Community Service.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Firstly, the member opposite obviously does not understand how you put together a very strategic plan, you build a strong framework. I have been meeting with stakeholders and advocacy groups from day one when I became the minister, and that is why we are looking at our consultation process right now. I am traveling the province speaking to people, because we put a solid framework together for that consultation, did a great deal of research to work with our partners and brought partners in who have helped us put that framework together. And if she really does care about it, like she tries to make out like they do, the fact is we did a consultation for HRM the other night and I did not see her there as part of that.
The Honourable Member for Bedford First Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I don't tend to go to sham consultations because they already know what they're going to do. Just like they knew what they were going to do on the budget consultations, and they went all around and they said, should we raise the HST? They knew they were going to raise the HST. It was a sham consultation. Mr. Speaker, under this NDP government, power rates have gone up by 30%. According to the Department of Community Services, in 2011-2012, there were 11,300 income assistance clients reporting power in their monthly budget at an annual cost to the department of $12.9 million, and I'll table that information. Mr. Speaker, this government's inaction on power rates and cuts to the HART program are hurting Nova Scotians. Where was the Minister of Community Services when the Premier refused to stand up against Nova Scotia Power and two more years of rate increases?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to know where her party was when they were in with respect to housing issues. Those issues did not happen overnight. We are the first government that has made a commitment to a housing strategy, and the member opposite can also go around and ask all the individuals who spent time in a roundtable consultation process giving their opinions, their thoughts, and we have set up a feedback opportunity for each and every one of them. You know what the problem is? They're totally embarrassed because they did not do anything about housing in this province, and so they're trying to tear apart something that people are very excited, thrilled about, and are so pleased of this government, what we have been doing.
Order, order, please. Oral questions put by members to ministers. The time has expired. I will now recognize the Honourable Government Host Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, could you please call bills for third reading?
Bills for third reading, Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could you please call Bill 97?
Bill number 97, Fairer Power Rates. The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am pleased to close the debate here on Bill 97, the Fair Power Rates Act, and I certainly want to thank all my honourable colleagues for their thoughts and discussions over the last couple of days. And